The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter number 5, text number 37, given by His Grace Sriman Sankarshan Das Hathikari, recorded on November 25th, 2006, in Manama, Bahrain.
So tonight we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter number 5, Narada's teachings to Vasudeva. Text number 37. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Nahi attaparamo labho dehinam brahmyatam iha yato vindeta paramam shantim nashyati samsriti. Translation and purport. Indeed, indeed, there is no higher possible gain for embodied souls forced to wander throughout the material world than the Supreme Lord's Sankirtan movement, by which one can attain the supreme peace and free oneself from the cycle of repeated birth and death. Just see, Narada Muni is a Sankirtan devotee. Purport. In the Skanda Purana, as well as in other Puranas, there is the following statement. Mahabhagavata nityam kalau kurvanti kirtanam. During Kali Yuga, the great devotees of the Lord always engage in kirtan, chanting the Lord's holy names. It is the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to be merciful, and He is especially merciful to those who in a helpless condition take complete shelter of His lotus feet. One can immediately take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord by chanting His holy name. According to Sridhar Swami, even in previous ages, such as Satya Yuga, it was not possible for the living entities to achieve the perfection that is available in the Kali Yuga. Srila Jiva Goswami has explained this as follows. In former ages, such as the Satya Yuga, human beings were perfectly qualified and easily performed even the most difficult spiritual processes, meditating for many thousands of years practically without eating or sleeping. Thus, although in any age, one who takes complete shelter of the Lord's holy names gets all perfection, the highly qualified inhabitants of Satya Yuga do not consider that merely moving the tongue and lips, chanting the whole Lord's holy names, is a complete process, and that the Lord's holy name is the only shelter for the universe. They are more attracted to the difficult and elaborate yoga system of meditation, complete with sophisticated sitting postures, painstaking control of the breath, and deep, extended meditations in trance on the personality of Godhead within the heart. In Satya Yuga, sinful life is practically unheard of, and therefore people are not afflicted with the terrible reactions seen in the Kali Yuga, such as world war, famine, plague, drought, insanity, etc. Although in Satya Yuga, people always worship the personality of Godhead as the ultimate goal of life, and meticulously follow his laws called dharma. They do not feel themselves to be in a helpless condition, and thus they do not always experience intense love for the Lord. However, in the Kali Yuga, living conditions are so unbearable. Modern governments are so obnoxious. Our bodies are so ridden by physical and mental disease, and even self-preservation is so troublesome that the conditioned souls intensely cry out the holy name of Krishna, begging for relief from the onslaught of this age. The members of the Krishna consciousness movement have vivid and unforgettable experiences of the terrible contradictions inherent in human society in this age. And thus they are firmly convinced that there is nothing to be achieved except the mercy of the Supreme Lord. In ISKCON centers throughout the world, we observe wonderfully ecstatic kirtan performances in which men, women, and children from all walks of life chant with startling enthusiasm the holy names of Krishna and dance in ecstasy, becoming completely indifferent to so-called public opinion. In America, a prominent professor from Oberlin College visited a Hare Krishna center in California and was astonished by the enthusiasm with which the devotees chant the holy name of Krishna in their congregational performances. Thus, due to their helpless and pathetic condition, the living entities in Kali Yuga have great impetus to surrender fully to the holy name of Krishna, putting all of their hope and faith in the Lord's holy name. Kali Yuga is therefore the best age, because in this age, more than in Satyayuga or other ages, the conditioned souls become disgusted with the kingdom of illusion and surrender fully to the Lord's holy name. This status of full surrender is called Paramam Shantin, or the Supreme Peace. Srila Madhvacharya has quoted a passage from the book called Svabhavya to the extent that a bona fide spiritual master in disciplic succession is able to understand the mentality and capability of his disciples and engage them in worshipping the particular form of the Lord suitable for them. In this way, the spiritual master destroys all obstacles in the path of his disciples. The general rule is that one must worship the particular form of the Lord that appears in the current yuga. One may also offer his love and worship to other forms of the Lord that appear in other ages. And specifically, one is recommended to chant the holy name of Lord Sringadev to get all protection. Practically, all these injunctions are being carried out within the ISKCON movement. Within the Krishna Consciousness Society, men, women, and children are all being engaged in worshipping the Lord according to their particular natures. In addition, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's order, we are worshipping Balaram and Krishna, who appeared in Dwapara Yuga, because they are the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Similarly, by chanting the Dashavatar Shotra, Jaya Jagadisha Hare, and by reading Srimad Bhagavatam, the members of ISKCON worship all of the plenary expansions of the Personality of Godhead. And after each arti performance, devotional prayers are duly chanted to Lord Nisringadev, protection of this movement, which is so essential to human society. Om Agyana Timarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Gadam Hayam Yadati Svapadam Tikam. So, this is the highest platform of self-realization. There are many systems given in Veda for elevating the consciousness. But they are indirect, actually. This light, if your nose starts itching, there are two ways you can scratch your nose, you see. There's the indirect way and the direct way. So what do you do? This is the indirect way. Do you scratch your nose indirectly? Or do you scratch it directly? Is it? So, the Sankirtan process is the direct method, the simple and direct method. You simply chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Why complicate things? The goal is to develop love for God. Not that I need to develop some mystic powers, the ashta siddhis, to become smaller than the smaller or greatest than the greatest, to develop that, that prapti siddhi that I can reach all the way to Bombay and grab some watch from a jewelry store. I don't need, who needs prapti siddhi, you see? Who needs to become lighter than the lightest, lagima siddhi, you see? These things are not needed. Why not just take the simple, easy process to absorb ourselves in Krishna's sweet holy names? This is all we really have to do. And this is what Narada Muni is recommending. There's no higher gain. Why should we look to any other process, any other system? Is that intelligent? Is it? Bhagavatam also says that those persons who have good brain substance, in this age they worship that incarnation of the Lord who comes. Is it? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that is described, that nice verse. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishnam, that verse is there. Is it? Those persons who have good brain substance. So why the general population is not worshipping Lord Chaitanya? The Alpamedasa. Because they are meager intelligence. As Prabhupada poetically described, cow dung. They have cow dung in their head. Or maybe pig dung would be a better way to describe. Pig stool. You see? So, the actual intelligent people in this age, they take to the Namas and Kirtan movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it is confirmed by Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami. You know that confirmation? Yeah. He says that if you use your intelligence to study the sublime teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you will find them to be strikingly wonderful. It's not that it is just wonderful, it is strikingly wonderful. There's a big difference. There may be so many wonderful things, but how many things are strikingly wonderful? You see? That is the Nama Sankirtan movement of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So why is it so wonderful? Is this simply some hype? They were telling you it's wonderful, so you will join, so we will have more members, more donors. Is that what it's all about? That some charismatic leader is simply hyping us, so we will give our time and money to support the mission? No. I would never join a cult. This was the Hare Krishna movement If ISKCON was a cult, I would not get near this movement. It's not a cult. This movement is actually the incarnation of Krishna. Krishna has appeared in this age in the form of the Krishna consciousness movement. This is Krishna himself. He has come. So by coming to the Krishna consciousness movement, you are getting the direct association of Sri Krishna and his most merciful manifestation, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So only a complete fool would not join. Only a complete fool would not join this movement. There are four different kinds of fools described in Bhagavad Gita. Namang duskritino mudha pripadyante naranama mayaya parintagyano asuram bhavamashrita. These are the four kinds of fools who don't join Hare Krishna movement. Duskritina. Kritina means one who performs meritorious activities, glorious, wonderful activities he performs. And the dushkritina, very bad activities, you see. So, those persons who don't join Hare Krishna movement, they are called dushkritina. They are low class. And they have four different types of low class qualities. And the first quality is mudha. They are foolish like asses. And the second quality is nara dhamma. They are the lowest among them. The third quality is mayaya paritta jnana. Their knowledge is stolen by illusion. And the fourth quality, asuram bhav. They partake of the atheistic nature of demons. So that is the position. So, do you think that we are free from those qualities? Or do you think we're still struggling with those qualities ourselves? What do you think? Are we still struggling? Yeah. So everybody should wake up. If you're falling asleep right now, that means you're a mudha. So, don't fall asleep. I know you had a hard, long day and you're tired, but this is most important. Everyone should wake up. Because we have to free ourselves of the dirt in the heart. Our attitude is not one that we think we're better than everyone else. We simply understand we're more fortunate than everyone else. Not that we're better. Vaishnava never thinks he's better than everyone else. He feels that he's the humble servant of everyone else. Everyone is higher than him. That's his mood. You see, he's very respectful, just like devotees who go out and do book distribution to the general public. Those devotees who are expert at distributing large quantities of books, they're very, very respectful to everyone. They appreciate people. They're good qualities. You see, and they try to encourage those good qualities by giving them, they become even more good qualities by giving them Prabhupada's books. So the Vaishnava actually, he doesn't think he's better than other people. He simply feels, even though I am the most fallen person, simply a rascal, somehow I have been blessed with the mercy of Guru, the mercy of Krishna. Brahmanda Brahmite Bukhanda Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Pai Bhakti Lata Beach. Somehow I am most fortunate. I have been blessed with the mercy of Guru and Krishna. So now let me do service to others. Let me serve my brothers and sisters. Let me give them this Krishna consciousness. You see. This is the mood of a Vaishnava. He never thinks that he is better than others. Simply, I somehow have gotten this good fortune, now let me share it. He feels sorry for everyone. He feels great pity in his heart to see how the people are suffering, caught up in sense gratification, foolishly running after the false pleasure of this body. What is that false pleasure? It is the combination of the senses with the sense objects. But isn't that pathetic? Isn't that pathetic that someone will try to get happiness by connecting with their senses with the objects of the senses? Is that not pathetic? Isn't that a horrible disaster to see a person trying to be happy by combining the senses with the sense objects? It's a horrible thing. Why? Because he is not that body. He is trying to get happiness on a false platform. Therefore, it is not possible that he can ever get any happiness. Never. He can never experience even one moment of genuine happiness. Because he is trying to get happiness on the false platform of I am this body. So the first business we have in cultivating our liberation from the cycle of birth and death is to understand I'm not this body. If I said all the ladies raise their hand, the people and devotees on this side of the room raise their hand, and all the gents raise their hand. But then I'd say, but that's an illusion. Because you're not male, you're not female. Actually, I cannot say that I'm male. I'm not. I can say the body is male. It's like I'm wearing this chadar. I can take it off also. So I'm wearing a male body and the jivas over here are wearing female bodies. We are all jivas. Throughout millions of lifetimes, sometimes we're wearing male body, female body, animal body, human body, demigod body, plant body, germ body, insect body, fish body. So many bodies, Jalaja Navalakshani, Stavara Lakshavingshati, Krimaya Rudra Samkhyakaha, in this way. So many varieties of bodies. So we should not think, I'm a male, I'm a female, I'm Indian, I am this, I'm that. We have to kick out this false conception. Even as devotees, we tend to still think that I'm male or female. I'm middle-aged, I'm young, I'm old. These are false conceptions. Absolutely false. We have to clear this crud out of our brains. We have to clear the dung, cow dung out of our brains. It makes us think that I'm male and I'm female. We have to always remember, I'm not this body, I'm the eternal spirit soul, I'm servant of God, I'm servant of Krishna. So let me give myself fully in His service. And then and only then can we be happy. As long as we try to base our happiness on the conception of I am male or I'm female, I'm this, I'm that, anything besides I'm the eternal servant of Krishna, any attempt to enjoy happiness is simply a waste of time. Shrama eva kevalam. It is a foolish, useless waste of time. To try to get happiness from any other conception other than I'm simply the eternal servant of Krishna. So how many times we try to find happiness through other means? If we honestly look in our hearts, we'll have to be a little embarrassed. Just imagine if we had a special computer, you know, a special little device we could implant in your brain. And that device would project all your thoughts on a big, huge screen so that all the devotees in the community could see what you were thinking at every minute. At every second, they would know exactly what you're thinking. Would you have to hide in the closet? Or could you sit, or you could, without any embarrassment, you could let everyone see every thought that was going on in your brain at every second. Because every thought was pure. It was Krishna conscious. I see a lot of smiles here. That's because we know how dirty our thoughts are sometimes. You see. So because we have those dirty thoughts, sometimes we say things that aren't very nice also. You think dirty thoughts, sometimes you say offensive things. You speak bad, you say words which are not very nice sometimes. And they do things that aren't very nice also. You see. So we really have to, on this pathway of bhakti, all we really have to do is bring the mind under control. We got to clear all the dirt out. And how do you do that? Do you just make the mind blank like the Mayavadis? No. You have to fill your mind with positive, wonderful thoughts at every minute. That's the key. You have to find the way to always have wonderful, loving thoughts at every minute. You see? When we get initiated, when I initiate my disciples, Aramanjayapataka Swami initiates. Our standard is from Prabhupada. When we initiate our disciples, we ask them, as you know, to chant 16 rounds on Japamala and follow the four principles. But there's also the 10 offenses. Prabhupada wanted those 10 offenses to be described also at the initiation lecture. Because if you may follow the four rules and chant 16 rounds, but as long as you're committing nama-parad, you will not go back to Godhead. One has to give up the aparad. Nama-parad has to be given up. So that means we have to be very pure. We have to give up all material attachments. Now some people will say, what is the first aparad? Vaishnava aparad. That is the most dangerous of all the offenses. If we are offensive towards a Vaishnava, if the husband is offensive towards his wife, the wife is offensive towards her husband, the parents are offensive to the kids are offensive to the parents, if in the temple, any relationship between devotees, if we are offensive, that will kill our devotional creeper. That will kill it. So someone may think, well, I have the perfect way to avoid committing offenses. I'm just going to remain alone. I won't come to the temple anymore. I'll just hide. I won't associate with devotees. Therefore, I won't commit any offenses. But guess what? That doesn't work. That's the Mayavadi thing, you know, the Mayavadi program. You cannot avoid committing offenses by avoiding the association of devotees. Because if you avoid the association, then you're thinking, well, I don't want to associate with that devotee because he has this bad quality and that bad quality, etc., etc. So you commit so many aparads if you just try to remain aloof from the devotees. So what to do? What you have to do is take hint from who? Srila Rupa Goswami. Who's the great grandfather of devotional service. He's given us nectar of devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And he has given us a little short guide in 11 verses. a short and simple guide also, nectar of instruction. Dadati pratigrinati, the six loving exchanges. So that's what we have to do. We have to learn how to be always engaged in the six loving exchanges with the Vaishnavas. And what are they? You give gift to a devotee. You accept gifts from the devotee. You serve prasadam to the devotees. You accept prasadam. You appreciate it when devotees offer you prasadam. Is it? And you reveal your mind to the devotees. And when a devotee wants to reveal his mind to you, you open your ears and hear him. You open your ears and hear. The devotee wants to reveal, it's like now I'm revealing my mind to you. So if you open your ears and fully absorb in hearing what I'm saying, that is your love from your side. I'm giving love from my side, and you're giving love from your side. So if we follow these six loving exchanges, then there'll be no room for aparadha. All aparadha become nil. And we're not committing offenses to devotees, but as a result, we advance like anything. Very quickly we advance. Spiritual advancement is really wonderful. You can actually advance to the point where you know where you can actually see Krishna face to face. Would you like that? Would you like to be able to see Krishna face to face, your own personal experience? You may say that's a little far-fetched, but it's not. Srila Prabhupada personally wrote me one letter. My dear Sankarshan. He said in this letter, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. That's his order. So you think that order is only for me? Not for the other ISKCON members? No. I was simply a rank and file ISKCON member. And Prabhupada ordered me to qualify myself to see Krishna face to face. So that means every one of us has that order from Prabhupada. Now you must qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. So we have to strictly follow our vow to chant at least 16 vows. And those who are not yet initiated, they should come to that point where they can take initiation now. Chant at least 16 rounds, follow the four principles, and avoid the 10 aparadha, so 10 nam aparadha. This is a very important thing. If you are not focused on this, what is the use of your tilak and your kanti mala? That's my challenge to you. If you are not focused on purifying your heart at every minute, then what is your tilak and your neck beads? It's simply show bottle. Is it? Simply show. We have to focus on purifying our consciousness so we can actually reach that point where we can see Krishna directly. So how do you do? Actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, don't try to see God, but try to act in such a way that God will see you. That's when you will see Him, actually. When you do such nice service, such pure bhakti, that Krishna will want to come and see you. That's when you will see. You can't force your way. You have to attract the mercy of Krishna by sincere service. That is the key. So we're very happy to be here. My wife, Vishnupriya Mataji, and I, one with a camera over here. We're very, very happy to be here with you wonderful devotees who are so sincerely pushing on the Sankirtan movement here in Bahrain. It is a great happiness for us to have an opportunity to exchange loving exchange with so many nice devotees. This is a great blessing for us to have your Sangha. So we thank you very much for maintaining such a nice...
This car number 113610 Pajero 256535 Caprice. If that belongs to us, please remove from the place. It's obstructing somebody's will.
So, we can ask now if there's any questions. And please speak loudly because I am hard of hearing. Loudly and clearly. Krishna orders you when the spiritual master approach the guru and inquire. So guru has come. So now you must inquire. Krishna orders. Spiritual master has come. Now you have to inquire. It's the order of Krishna. So don't be shy. Krishna is ordering you to ask questions. Yeah.
We tend to do aparadhas. How to come over the easiest way?
How to overcome that? Yes.
Easiest way.
Easiest way? Yeah, as I explained, I'll elaborate further. The easiest way to overcome aparadha is not to say, well, I have to avoid aparadha. I mean, that's all right, but that's not the best way. The best way is to always have positive feeling. And I'll give you a good example. Let's say there's one devotee that you don't get along with very well. You're always saying, oh, this devotee has that fault, he has this fault, he has that fault. That happens sometimes. There's certain devotees, you know, we just don't seem to get along well with them. So what do you do with it to not be offensive? Here's the secret. Look at that, think about that devotee. Think what the good qualities he has are. Think of all the service he's done for so many years for Prabhupada's movement. Even though maybe you personally don't get along with him well, just from a distance, think of what wonderful service he's doing. You know, he does this service, he does that service, been dedicated for so many years. In this way, just think of the one, just meditate on that devotee's wonderful qualities. Instead of letting your mind find fault with him, think about his wonderful qualities, all the nice service that he's doing. And you know the advantage of doing that? This is an advantage. If you meditate on a devotee's faults, you know what happens? Then those faults will come to you. You will have to develop the same faults. Whatever you're meditating on, that's what you're developing your own consciousness. If you meditate on a devotee's faults, then those faults will manifest in you also. But if you meditate on his saintly qualities, then those qualities will manifest in you. So it actually pays off to... It's a very rewarding thing to always think of the saintly qualities of the devotee. Because if that's all you're thinking about, if every devotee in the whole community here, you're seeing the saintly qualities in each and every devotee in this community, then you are going to be very quickly become a very great saintly devotee. Because you're always meditating on the saintly qualities of the devotees. That will manifest in you. Next question. Mm-hmm. I have to tell you, I have a policy. If you don't have questions, you know what, we go into another program, you know what that program is? That's I ask you questions. I'll pick someone and, all right.
Prabhu, is this the same way we deal with the karmic people? Like, we try to look for their qualities. If we don't get along with karmic people?
Family?
Karmic.
The same thing actually applies to karmis. Of course, it's in a different way. Because in karmi, you have the position, you have the very solid position to be their teacher. You're their superior. Because you have taken the Krishna consciousness and they have not. But even in karmi, to really be qualified to enlighten a karmi, someone who is not Krishna conscious, you have to be able to see their good qualities also. This was the greatness of Prabhupada. In any person, he could find that good quality and he could encourage it in that person. Tamal Krishna Maharaj explained in this way. Prabhupada could see the spark of devotion in any person and he could fan that spark into a blazing fire. You see, even for non-devotee, everyone has some good quality because they are all part and parcel of Krishna. You see, there's some good quality on some level. Even the most demoniac person, he has his soft side. So we have to be very expert to see that good quality in someone and encourage him. We have to know how to connect with their good side and encourage that side to come out more and more and more and more and more and more. Our tendency is, because of pride, our tendency is to see the fault in the other and to think, I am better than this other person. That hurts us. That hurts our ability to develop proper relationships. Even amongst devotees, the same thing. That pride hurts us. That's why it's so important. Trinadapi sunichena tarorapi sahishnina amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. We should become very, very, very humble. So we can see the good in anyone and everyone. And encourage that to come out. Actually, everyone is a devotee. Every jiva throughout the whole universe is a devotee. Just it's covered by non-devotional mentality. Everyone is part and parcel of Krishna. Aham sarvasya prabhava matak sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, I am the source of everyone. Everything comes from me. So everyone actually wants Krishna consciousness. Every single jiva throughout this entire universe wants to join this movement. Actually, within their heart, innermost core of their heart, every soul on this planet wants to join this Hare Krishna movement, become a devotee. But their intelligence has been kidnapped by Maya. You see, they've been kidnapped by Maya. And they can't see it. So we have to find some way to rescue these souls and bring them to this Krishna consciousness movement. That is love, that is compassion. Questions more?
We are not the body, we are an eternal soul. Mm-hmm. This is transcendental knowledge. Mm. So in your lessons you start with this knowledge that we should first understand that we are not the body.
Right.
So this is the basis, but this is a transcendental knowledge which will come after some time. So how this?
Yes, just like in you have A, B, C, and then you have gradually you have grammar, and you know, high, and then you have poetry, you know, something drama. You start off with A, B, C, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J, K, L, M, N, O, P. You know, you start out very simply. And then gradually you build up. So the first thing Prabhupada said, first convince them that they are not their bodies. It begins with them. And if you're not your body, then what are you? You have to be something. It's not that you are non-existent. Everyone knows that they exist. Everyone has first-hand experience that I exist. You see? So if you're not the body, then what are you? I have some sense of identity. So what is that identity? And by proper philosophical analysis, as confirmed by Vedic wisdom, you're a spirit soul. And what is the nature of the spirit soul? The spirit soul is not the complete whole. The spirit soul is part of the complete whole. And we see that in every example, within nature and within things manufactured by men, that the part of the whole is always meant to serve the complete whole. Just like I have this watch, and there is the second hand on the watch, it is part of the watch. But it serves the function of the entire watch. And if it stops to serve that function, then I have to take it to the repair shop, you see. Because it is meant to serve the complete whole function of that watch. Well, the part is always meant to serve the whole. So you are a part of that complete whole, the spirit soul. So you are meant to serve the complete whole. That is your perfection. And if you are not serving that complete whole, you are in a diseased or a broken state, then you require healing or repair. You see. So this is common sense. This is logic. Before we even bring in scriptural evidence, just on the basis of logic alone, we can establish that you have to serve the complete whole.
Body will always be hindrance. Body will always come in the hindrance, or something will happen, body and...
What is the question?
The question is, the body, if you are an eternal soul, this realization is... the top realization, and the body will always be hindrance to that realization in the initial.
Not necessarily. If you identify with the body, then it is hindrance. But if you use the body as an instrument, it is then it is help. This human body is a blessing. We are not against the body. You simply have to realize it's not me. But actually to have a human body is the greatest facility. It's the greatest blessing. Out of 8,400,000 species. And to be here in the earth planet, a human birth in the earth planet, that is the topmost good fortune that you can have. So we are not, it is a blessing actually. You simply have to see it as an instrument and not as you. See it as an opportunity to have a human body and utilize it. Now I've gotten this very special, special opportunity. Let me utilize it to become spiritually perfect. Any other questions? Yes. What did he say?
As a grihastha, is it possible to give up the desires?
For a grihastha, is it possible
to? Is it possible to give up the desire?
Give up the disease?
Desire.
Desires. Oh, okay. Yeah. Actually, that is Buddhism, giving up desires. We're not interested in giving up desires. We don't want to become desireless. That idea that they become desireless is a fallacy. Because they desire to become desireless. That is another desire. You cannot become desireless. That is artificial. You simply have to purify your desires. That's all. Grihastha, he is not under any impediment. That Brahman Kurma, he was hosting Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his house during the rainy season. And of course, just imagine Lord Chaitanya staying in your house. How happy you're going to feel. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is my personal guest for 4 months. Can you imagine? Just like some of you, when Jai Pataka Swami stays in your house for 4 days, how great you feel, you see? So just imagine Lord Chaitanya is staying in your house for 4 months. Wow! And then Lord Chaitanya is leaving. And oh, he can't tolerate it. The Brahman, Kurma, he cannot tolerate it. Now I will take sannyas, I will come with you. But what did Lord Chaitanya say? You know the verse. Yare deka tarikaha Krishna upadesha mara agai guru hoyatare dev. Whomever you meet, instruct him in the teachings of Krishna in this way on my order, you become guru and deliver the people of this country. So, he wanted to become desireless and give up that grihastha life. But Lord Chaitanya said, no. You remain at home, but you become a preacher. So what does it mean to be a grihastha, a preacher grihastha? It means you become pure in your devotional service. You encourage your wife to become pure in your devotional service. You encourage your children to become pure in their devotional service. You encourage your neighbors, your friends, your co-workers, anyone and everyone that you can possibly influence in your life, you encourage them. You have to be an ideal example of a Krishna conscious household, arising early in the morning, worshipping the Lord, chanting 16 rounds, studying the scripture, being very clean, applying tilak to the body. You see, where, do you have tilak on tonight? You do? I can't see the tilak from here. You see? Become ideal grihastha. You see? Become an ideal grihastha. There is no impediment. Who did Lord Chaitanya agree to accept as his guru? Ramananda Roy, a grihastha, was taking the role of guru, teaching Lord Chaitanya. Can you imagine? He was not a Brahmin grihastha. You know, but he was a government man, which is also considered contamination. A government man. He was government man, and he was married man. And Lord Chaitanya said, I will hear from you about Krishna consciousness, Ramananda Roy. So there is no impediment. Also, the life is not impediment. One can have wife and be fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Of course, one also can be vanaprastha also. It's like I am vanaprastha. My wife and I, we are traveling and preaching all over the world. We finished one round the world ticket, London to London, preaching all around the globe. And then what did we do? That same day, the first ticket finished, we bought another one. And we did another round the world ticket. Looping loop. We're on our second round the world ticket now. We were flying from Amsterdam to Doha. The stewardess asked us about our travel. We explained and she was amazed. She said, how long will you continue doing this? He said, oh, the rest of our life. So having wife is no impediment. You simply have to become a pure devotee, that's all. No illicit sex. This is a misconception sometimes. I don't know if you hear it, but I've seen sometimes. I initiated one disciple. I have a little shock. I said, what are the four principles? She said, no meat eating, no intoxication, no gambling, and no sex outside of marriage. I said, wait a minute. No illicit sex within marriage also. We have sex for procreation only in this movement. We don't have sex for recreation. Even if we're married, we don't have sex for recreation. We have sex only for procreation. That's the first thing. There's two kind of married person. There's grihamedi and grihastha. Grihastha means he is strictly following regulated principles. You see? Actually, Grihastha, Prabhupada said, Grihastha, they are Paramahamsa. In one lecture, he was saying, our Grihastha, when he was actually Grihastha, he is Paramahamsa. He is on the highest level. So, there is no impediment to being a householder if you strictly follow these principles. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he has written a very nice song. Very nice song. He says, I earn money simply to support your household, my Lord. He took his job. He was your working job, or you have a business? Working job. Can you earn businesses here? Can you own a business here? Everybody has to work job. You allowed to own your own business in Bahrain? No, okay. So everybody here is employee. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was also employee of British government. So he's saying, I am simply, my dear Lord, I am earning money simply to support your household. So stop thinking it is your household. Stop thinking this is my wife and these are my kids. And this is my house, my apartment. You have to see everything as the property of Krishna. And use everything in the service of Krishna. And then even earning your money will be transformed, and even earning your livelihood will be transformed into bhakti. If you give up the false sense of proprietorship, that I am the Lord of this house, I am the Lord of my wife, I am the Lord of my kids. You have to be the humble servant of your children, the humble servant of your wife. In this way you will become a liberated grihastha. To see yourself simply the servant and the servant and the servant and the servant. Any other questions?
Just one quick question. As one advances transcendental.
As one advances.
Transcendental. He really understands all the bodies. And advances
transcendentally.
Transcendentally, okay. No value for the bodily relationship. That's not true. We don't negate the bodily relationship. If a bodily relationship can be used in the service of Krishna, we give it great value.
As a family.
We are all family here. We are one big family. You are my family member. There is the... You have wife... Don't think your family is only your wife and children. This is, our family is all living entities throughout the whole universe. Any relationship, if it can be utilized to increase your Krishna consciousness, that is favorable for your spiritual life. You simply have to see that you're the servant, not that you're the Lord. That's the key. Any relationship, if it's favorable for you, Prabhupada said, that if one's wife is favorable, there's no reason to take sannyasa. It's in his books, written in Prabhupada's books. Whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness, that we accept. If it is unfavorable, then we reject him. That is the criterion. It's not that a family relationship is bad. Lack of Krishna consciousness, that is bad. If a family relationship is favorable for my Krishna consciousness, then I do not have to give that up. I can keep that relationship. Our philosophy is accept whatever is favorable for Krishna consciousness and reject whatever is unfavorable for Krishna consciousness. That is our philosophy given by Prabhupada. But you have to realize that you're not your body. You have to. You have to see, this is something happening on the external plane. It's not really me. I'm not this male body. Or I'm not this female body. Simply, this is an arrangement on the external plane, but I can use this, I can utilize this in Krishna's service. The real thing is, are you initiated? Yes. The real thing is, you take diksha from Guru and you accept whatever Guru tells you. That's all. If Guru tells you, now you take sannyas and you go to Vrindavan, you do that. If Guru says, you remain with your wife, then you do that. Whatever Guru says, that is your renunciation. Just like the Brahmin Kurma, he wanted to give up his wife and family. The Lord Chaitanya ordered him, you stay at home. So that was his renunciation. He became a better sannyas by staying at home with his wife than artificially displeasing Lord Chaitanya to go to leave the home. You see, the highest renunciation is to please the Lord. Otherwise, it's just your own. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I don't want the responsibility of married life, so I will give it up and become a sannyasi. But that's your sense gratification. There was one man, that was a brahmachari. He thought, well, I will be happier if I get married. So then he got married. He thought, well, now I'll be happier if I take sannyas. Prabhupada did not like his attitude. He said, you are thinking that changing will make you happy. No. Your problem is you are lacking Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada did not accept his request for sannyas. He could see he's just a whimsical person. He's not willing to take responsibility on any level. One should take full responsibility according to one's guru's instructions. And then by doing that, you become perfect. That is the highest renunciation. Whatever Guru Maharaj says, I accept. That's all, finished. That is the highest renunciation. Okay? So, one last question. It's getting late. Yeah.
One of the qualities says that nobody should envy to that particular person.
He's not envious.
Yeah. No, not he is not envious, but somebody else, he should be in such a way that nobody should be envy to him.
How is that described in the 26 qualities?
This 26 quality, one of the qualities says that he should be behaving in such a way that nobody become envy to him.
Okay.
And one of the purport, that is the quality of Vaishnava, it is mentioned. One of the purport, Srila Prabhupada says that Vaishnava will have the envy people because, and then Srila Prabhupada is quoting that one of the best Vaishnava is Prahlad Maharaj, and even his father was envy to him.
Yeah.
So he said that that is not possible. So now these two things are how it relates.
Yes. There is a similar apparent contradiction in the it's described that the six Goswamis, dera jana priyo, they were dear both to the gentle and to the ruffians. Everyone loved the Goswami. So that is described, the devotee is dear to everyone because he is not envious of anyone, therefore no one is envious of him. That is a general principle. But there are asuras out there also. They will be envious regardless. It's like they crucified Lord Jesus. They beat Haridas Thakur. That's also there. The general principle is yes, because the devotee loves everyone, everyone loves him. Wherever he goes, he's giving such love to everyone. The general population will feel great love, just like Prabhupada. Everyone loved Prabhupada. They were amazed. Everywhere he went, Prabhupada was greatly appreciated. But in Singapore, they wouldn't let him in the country. You see? It sometimes happens that people are very envious and they cannot appreciate a sadhu. Although generally, the sadhus are appreciated. So, time is running short.
No problem.
Huh?
If you have no problem, you have no problem.
Well, we have puja to do in them. Well,
also
we wish to
hear something from you about your days with Srila Prabhupada.
What do you want to hear?
Your days with Srila Prabhupada.
My days with Prabhupada?
Yeah, little bit.
All right. many people ask me when I travel around the world, they say, how did you meet Prabhupada? So, The fact is that as early as 1969, I was offered opportunity to meet Prabhupada, but I refused to go. Because in those days, as of spiritual seeking, the first books I had read were Mayavadi books. So the books taught me that I was Krishna. So I thought that was pretty cool. I'm God. But I had this, but meeting the devotees, I had this feeling that if I went to see their guru, he would tell me that I wasn't God. So I didn't want to go. I didn't want the Swami to pop my bubble that I'm God. So I initially refused to go. In 1969, Prabhupada came to where I was staying, just a few blocks away from where I was living. Prabhupada gave lecture, I wouldn't go. And then the following year, in 1970, again I was visiting Berkeley, California, and the devotees said, "Oh, Prabhupada is coming to Los Angeles. There'll be a big festival. Come on, we have a van. Just get in the van and come with us. We're going to go see Prabhupada." I said, "No, I wouldn't go." You see. Because I had this idea, that this false idea from these Mayavadi, these rascal Mayavadi gurus. They give me this false idea that I was God, you see. But then, after trying to be God for a couple of years and getting smashed very heavily by the material nature, I finally realized that I wasn't really God. And then I was just begging God to guide me, how I could be His servant. Just very sincerely begging, praying every day, "Dear God, please guide me how I can be your perfect servant." And then, see, and then when I became humble like that, then Krishna gave me the opportunity to meet Prabhupada. Krishna was very kind to me. He wouldn't allow me to see Prabhupada when I would be offensive towards him, you see. I would have been offensive to him in the beginning when I had that Mayavadi conception. I would have been very offensive to Prabhupada. But I am Krishna, you see. So Krishna was very kind. He did not allow me, when I had that offensive attitude, Mayavadi idea, to get near Prabhupada. But then when I finally became completely humble, and I was begging for the mercy of the Lord, then I got my opportunity. Of course, what are the two presences of the spiritual master? Vani and Vapu. His physical presence, Vapu. His vibrational presence, Vani. So, when I first met Prabhupada, actually it was Vani. I had Vani darshan before I had Vapu darshan. Because devotees were telling me all about Prabhupada, his wonderful qualities, his wonderful, amazing pastimes. So many wonderful things I heard, his wonderful teachings, etc., etc., etc. And devotees were trying to encourage me. I was visiting the temple for some time to see what I could learn about being a monk. I hadn't decided to join, but I was seeing what it is like to be a monk. Let me see what I can learn from the life of monk. So, devotees said, "Well, you should surrender to Prabhupada and become a disciple." I said, "Well, I'm a devotee of Krishna, but, you know, I don't want to accept the guru. Because then, you have to give up your independence. If the guru says do this, you have to do it, right?" So I didn't want to surrender. I was thinking, I'll be a devotee of Krishna. I'll chant, you know, I'll sing Hare Krishna. But the devotees pointed out one verse in the Bhagavad Gita, "Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshinaha." Just try to learn the truth by approaching Guru, you see. Surrender, serve Him. So I was defeated. He said, "If you want to be a devotee, you have to accept the Guru, otherwise you're not obeying Krishna." But I could see they were right, but still I was stubborn, I wouldn't do it. I just was stubborn. I had no philosophical leg to stand on now. They showed me that verse, but still I was stubbornly holding on to my independence. But then one day, there was a wonderful record album that was given to us by a radio station who did not want to play it. It was a record album produced by George Harrison and the London Devotees. You know that, Govindam, I'm deep, you know, we play it. But what is the second cut on that album? Very sweet. So anyway, my service was to vacuum the rug in the temple room every morning. And we were playing that album, and I was hearing that song. There was so much wonderful love in the voices of the devotees. The way they were singing, there was so much loving emotion. It was so sweet, it was so pure, it was so enlivening, it was so uplifting. I had been thinking, I don't want to surrender to the Guru. But now, I was hearing the feelings of those who had surrendered to the Guru, to Prabhupada. And it was so wonderful. Samsaradava nalalira loka Ranayakar Yunaganaganad Paraptasya Kalyana Gunarna Vasya Vande Guru Shri Chadanaraminam. When I heard that, I could feel the love in their hearts for Prabhupada. And I was simply thinking, wouldn't it be beautiful to give my life to Prabhupada? And I just started crying. That was when I met Prabhupada, actually. That moment when I surrendered my eternal existence at the lotus feet of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Tri Dandi Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada. I had not even seen Him yet. But I had already accepted Him as my Guru. So now, Krishna gave me the chance to meet Him. You see. I met Him in His most important manifestation, Vani. And now, shortly after that, I get to see Vapu. So anyway, Prabhupada was coming to the Ratha Yatra festival in the summer of 71, San Francisco. And the first wave of devotees left the temple. Vishnujan Maharaj took off along with Dvija Hari Prabhu and Sri Galim and Jai Gopal. And the rest of us were to come later. But then there was some trouble with the landlord. He wanted to evict us. So the GVC sent word that none of the remaining devotees of the temple should go to the Ratha Yatra festival. They must all stay back. And I was devastated. I was going to get to see Prabhupada, and now the GBC says I have to stay back. I can't go to see Prabhupada. And it was killing me. And I have to admit, I had a little bit of an independent streak in those days. So I said, I'm going to go anyway. I'm hitchhiking. I don't care what the GBC says. I'm going to go to see Prabhupada. I was very stubborn. But I will go see Prabhupada anyway. I don't care what anybody says. But then, by Krishna's wonderful, and of course, you don't want to disobey the GBC. I mean, that's not very good. But Krishna saved me from my predicament. Because then Vishnujan Maharaj called the GBC, Satyarupa Maharaj. He said, look, those devotees there, they're not competent to deal with the landlord anyway. I have to come back and do that. What's the use of them staying there? They can't do anything to solve the problem with the landlord. Let them come to Ratha Yatra. So then a car came down from Dallas and picked us up, and we drove to all the way from Texas out to California to see Prabhupada. And of course he wasn't there yet, but that wonderful day came, one Sunday, I think it was June 27th, 1971. That wonderful day came and Prabhupada was flying in to the San Francisco airport. In those days, there wasn't all the high security, you know, but you could go right up to where they come in the tube, you know. So there was about 300 devotees there, maybe 100. It was a big crowd, like here we have a big crowd. There was a big crowd of devotees there. And all the karmis came off the plane, they were totally amazed, because they came, They came out of the tube, and now they come into this huge kirtan, jumping up and down. They came through this, you know, two walls of devotees. They were amazed. They'd come out of the plane looking around. What's going on here, you know? So we waited and we waited. One passenger came, where is Prabhupada? We kept watching that tube, you know. Where is Prabhupada? Where is Prabhupada? And one passenger came, another. Finally, it seemed like Prabhupada was the last one. Finally, there he was. He was so short, they said he was so tall. He was the biggest man in the universe, Jagad Guru. But yet he was so short, it was amazing. And of course we all then got down immediately, fell down on the floor and offered our respects at his lotus feet. It was so wonderful to finally be in the presence of his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Of course, in those days we weren't so conscious about public relations. Some devotees had the idea, if you make a path of yogurt, it's very auspicious for the spiritual master to walk in a pathway of yogurt. So all the way through the whole airport terminal, devotees are putting yogurt on the floor. And Prabhupada walked in that pathway of yogurt all the way out to through the doors where the, you know, the driveway where the cars pull up. So there was one little problem. Prabhupada came out the door and there was no car. Nobody was there to take Prabhupada. There was no car to take Prabhupada to the Rathi Yatra site. So did Prabhupada get angry? No. Prabhupada just stood there. There's some photographs of this actually. There's some photographs taken. I've seen those photographs. Prabhupada is standing there outside the, you know, on the sidewalk, outside the door of the airport terminal. He's standing there very peacefully, just like an aristocratic gentleman, very peacefully, patiently standing there without saying a word. And all the devotees are just standing there looking at him, meditating on taking their darshan. Prabhupada standing for many minutes. For a very long time. Prabhupada is standing there and all the devotees are just standing there looking at him, taking their darshan. Not a word. Actually, I left early, you know why? Because I knew that Prabhupada was going to the Ratha Yatra site. I greeted him at the airport, and now some devotees said, let's leave and go to the site so we can greet him again when he comes to the Ratha Yatra site. So I took that hint and I left that scene to go to the down to the Ratha Yatra site so I could greet Prabhupada a second time. So I hadn't Prabhupada had not spoken a word there, so I hadn't heard any. They say that the only desire of the disciple, not they, but Narottam Das Thakur says, the only desire of the disciple is, what? To have his consciousness purified by the words emanating from the lotus mouth of Sri Guru. It's the only desire a disciple has, isn't it? Just like Shishi, Radha, Gopal, Krishna, Kija. Just like the disciples of Jaya Taka Maharaj, they have no greater pleasure than simply sit and take the words from his mouth into their ears, isn't it? Yes. We have no greater desire than to hear the words coming from the mouth of our Guru. But I had not yet heard a word coming from his mouth because at the airport he was silent. He didn't say anything. So now I finally got my desire to hear Prabhupada fulfilled. He came to the Ratha Yatra site. He got up on Subhadra Devi's cart, the third cart in the procession. Devotees had made an arrangement with microphone and so he probably could give lecture. Before the parade began, he gave lecture. And this lecture is in the collection, the MP3 collection. You can hear this lecture. It is the most wonderful lecture that Prabhupada has ever given. Of course, I'm biased because it's the first one I heard from his mouth. But I can tell you it's the most wonderful lecture that Prabhupada ever gave. Absolutely the most wonderful lecture. I'm biased. The very first word he said in that lecture was Jagannath. The very first word that came out of his mouth. He said, Jagannath Shami, Mayana Padagami, Bhavatume. O Lord of the universe, Jagannath Swami, please come to my vision. So in this way he explained that to become Krishna conscious, it is not difficult. He said, every one of you are drinking water once, twice, thrice, more than that every day. He said, if every time you drink water, you remember that Krishna is the taste of the water, then immediately you become Krishna conscious. To become Krishna conscious, it is not a difficult job. Simply it requires practice. So in this way, Prabhupada made it seem so easy. Actually, it's not that he just made it seem so easy. It is easy. But we, fools that we are, we make it difficult. That's a fact. It's so easy to be Krishna conscious, but we make it difficult. But Prabhupada made it very clear to us that day how easy it is. Every time you drink water, you simply remember that Krishna is the taste of the water. So, that is some of my experience with His Divine Grace. Someone asked me the other day in Doha, how much time did you spend with Prabhupada? And I answered them, I have spent 35 years with Srila Prabhupada. From that very moment when I accepted him as my guru, I've been in his constant association. That is the beauty of Vani Darshan. When you can learn to associate with your beloved Guru Maharaj in the form of his instructions, then you will have Guru Maharaj's association every minute. You will never be separated from Guru Maharaj. You will always feel like that he is with you. He is your guardian angel. He is there, he is protecting you. He is guiding you. He is seeing you. He is blessing you at every minute, you see. So, actually, I'm always getting them. Darshan. Prabhupada gave me some very poignant instructions. I have maybe 10 letters from Prabhupada, about 10 letters, full of the most poignant, wonderful instructions. The first thing he told me was a great encouragement to me. Actually, I was a mail order disciple. I got initiated by mail because Prabhupada was in London. When we went to the Ratha Yatra festival, after it we went to Los Angeles. And a few devotees from our temple, the rule was 6 months. You had to be practicing for 6 months. So I'd only been practicing for about maybe 4.5 months. So they wouldn't recommend me for initiation. And I tell you, I was scared. Because Prabhupada would always say, I'm an old man, I could die at any time. I was afraid I would miss. And actually, the other devotees, talk about envy. The other devotees got initiated because they had joined a few weeks before me in our Austin Center. But I had to watch them get initiated, but I could not. I was so worried that something would happen and I would never get it. I was so worried. But then finally my 6 months was up, and even though I was not what I would call the most cooperative a brahmachari living in the temple, Vishnujan Maharaj, very kindly wrote Prabhupada a letter. He said, this boy, Steve, he is doing very nice service. He is serving very nicely. He told Prabhupada. I was thinking, what mercy Vishnujan Maharaj has given. He has told Prabhupada, I'm serving nicely. I feel that I'm rascal. I'm not very cooperative or surrendered to the temple authority. They're just tolerating me. Right, that's how I saw myself. They're somehow just tolerating me. But Vishnujan Maharaj, he is this boy, Steve, he is serving very nicely. So Prabhupada said, yes, I will accept him as my disciple. And then a letter came from London, and then another separate mailing came, Japa Mala. I still have those very same Japa Mala with me after all these years. I've never lost those beads. But Prabhupada gave me personal instruction. And then, it was of course a very nice opportunity, because now Prabhupada has sent one letter to me. He sent me the beads. And you know, when you get initiated, what do you have to do? Guru Dakshina, isn't it? So Prabhupada was not there just to hand the money to someone to give it to him. No, Prabhupada is far away in Europe, actually. So I had an opportunity to write Prabhupada a letter with my Guru Dakshina checks that I collected at the Yajna. So this was a golden opportunity. Here I was a brand new devotee, and I got to write Prabhupada a letter. So, I don't remember what I wrote Prabhupada, but I know from his response, I must have said something like this, because I was with Vishnujan Maharaj, who was very dedicated to spreading this movement. He was in charge of our center there. He had made me a devotee. And I was very inspired by this mood of spreading the Krishna consciousness movement, the revolutionary spirit of making everyone Krishna conscious, you see. So I'm sure I must have told Prabhupada that I want to spread this movement. I'm sure I said that in the letter, because Prabhupada wrote me a thank you letter. Prabhupada was very meticulous to details. He said, I have received your checks of this amount. He gave me the exact amount of each check. $10.72 or whatever it was. He gave me the exact amount to make sure that the checks had not been lost or stolen or whatever. He gave me the exact amount of each check, of all three checks. And then he gave me an instruction. He said, I can see, and an encouragement, he said, I can see that you are a very sincere and enthusiastic boy. He said, now continue enthusiastically as you are doing, and surely Krishna will bless you. So I can tell you that in these 35 years I've been a member of ISKCON, there's been many ups and many downs. But through all those ups and downs, I had the order of Prabhupada that I must always be enthusiastic. I must never give up that enthusiasm that he saw in me as a new brahmachari. I must never give up that enthusiasm. That was his direct order to me. And you know what? I have always obeyed that order of Prabhupada. I have never given up my enthusiasm for even 1 second for this Krishna consciousness movement. And you know what's happened? It's just what Prabhupada said. Krishna will bless you. So Krishna has been pouring his mercy on me for 35 years. That's a fact. By the grace of Prabhupada. So there are many other things we can tell about our relationship with His Divine Grace. But that's a little introduction. A little introduction. It's an ongoing relationship. It's not a stagnant relationship. It is a, what is that? Dynamic relationship. My relationship with Prabhupada is dynamic. It's expanding moment by moment by moment. Because he's with me, he's blessing me, he's protecting me at every minute of my spiritual life. Anything else? Yeah, so we'll stop here and we'll continue tomorrow night, huh? We're having program tomorrow night?
Not here, but at the temple.
Another place. So we'll have another, there'll be a morning class somewhere. I don't know where. Maybe just at someone's house. But I will be giving a class. You can inquire from my host, Pavan, where I'm giving class tomorrow. If you have a chance to come, you're welcome. I'll be giving a short class tomorrow. No? Anyway, you ask Pavan what's going on. I'm just here. I'm just doing what I'm told. I don't know. I'm just a servant. I don't know what my schedule is. They say go here and talk. So I just do that. They just say go here and I talk about Krishna. So we thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.